This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about AI in B2B marketing in calendar weeks 27 and 28. Frenis is a B2B market research company that supports enterprise marketing teams in unlocking the full potential of their customer data with the help of AI.
Yeah, and I'm really glad to be digging into this material with you today.
Right, because, I mean, if you're listening to this, you've probably been navigating your B2B marketing with, like, the exact same GPS for 20 years now.
Pretty much.
And then overnight, 60% of your Google traffic just vanishes into an AI engine. The map went totally blank.
It's completely gone.
Exactly. So today, we're figuring out how to rebuild it. We're dissecting how brands actually get discovered. Now the search engines are basically turning into answer engines. Plus, the real mechanics of scaling AI SDRs without just burning your entire territory to the ground.
Which is so easy to do right now.
Oh, 100%. And we're also going to look at the hidden data traps waiting for you and, you know, why human taste is actually becoming the ultimate competitive moat.
That vanishing traffic thing is probably the perfect place to start, honestly.
Yeah.
Because the transition from traditional SEO to AEO answer engine optimization, or GEO, generative engine optimization, is forcing a complete teardown of the inbound playbook. I mean, ranking number one on a search page just doesn't guarantee a user is going to visit your website anymore.
Right. And the metric that really grounds that reality comes from Kyle Atwater-Morley. He noted that roughly 60% of Google searches now end with absolutely no click to any website.
60%? That's just wild.
It's huge. The user intent is entirely intercepted. They ask a question. The AI overview synthesizes the answer right there on the results page.
Yeah.
And the buyer has, well, zero reason to actually click through to the source material.
Which fundamentally breaks the traditional funnel, right?
Yeah.
A user reads that synthesized answer. They trust the brands recommended in the text, and they make a buying decision based solely on the summary. So you can technically win the keyword battle. You can secure the top organic spot and still watch your pipeline completely dry up because the AI caught the user before they even reached your domain.
Exactly.
But there's a secondary layer to this that's actually quite concerning for marketers, and it has to do with attribution.
Oh, you're talking about the ghost citation problem.
Yes.
Yeah. Mohammed Kamar Shafiq ran an analysis on this, and the numbers are a bit grim, honestly. He found that 62% of AI citations are what he calls ghost citations.
Let's explain the mechanism there. How exactly is he defining a ghost citation?
So it essentially means the AI engine scrapes your site, right? Mm-hmm. It uses your proprietary research to construct its answer, but it completely fails to name your brand to the user.
Yeah.
You're basically an uncredited ghostwriter. Like, in one specific study he highlighted, Medium was used as the foundational source material 16 times for a set of queries. But the platform was named to the user exactly zero times.
That creates a massive attribution black hole. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can't treat these AI models as a monolith either because they handle citations very differently based on their specific architecture.
Right, right.
He pointed out that Gemini, for example, will only provide a clickable hyperlink to sources about 21.4% of the time.
Okay.
However, it explicitly mentions the brand name in the generated text 83.7% of the time.
Oh, interesting. So Gemini acts more like a traditional PR mention. Like you get the brand awareness, even if you don't get the direct backlink traffic.
Precisely. But then you look at ChatGPT and it does the exact opposite.
Really?
Yeah. It has a relatively high frequency of providing those citation links, but a staggeringly low rate of actually mentioning the brand name in the conversational text itself. So if a buyer isn't, you know, hovering over those tiny footnote numbers in ChatGPT, they have absolutely no idea whose expertise they're reading.
That is, I mean, if we are doing all the heavy lifting and the models are just stripping our names off the final product, the obvious question is, how do we force the model's hand?
Yeah.
And we have to navigate a lot of noise here, too. Saharsh Agrawal issued a fairly blunt warning about this. He was calling out agencies that are just repackaging their standard legacy SEO services, slapping an AEO sticker on the deck and selling it as a brand new strategy.
Oh, you see it constantly right now.
All the time.
They're just optimizing H2 headers, maybe adding some FAQ dropdowns and pretending that somehow satisfies a large language model. But he notes that real AI visibility operates on a completely different temporal rhythm.
Right.
He points out there is a brutal 7-day recency window for certain queries. Wait, meaning what structurally? Because, like, if we publish a massive pillar page, doesn't that hold its weight for months?
Not in an AI ecosystem, not when it's constantly re-indexing for the most current context. If you publish a batch of technical articles and just walk away, your AI visibility can degrade in a matter of days. The models prioritize newer, fresher signals to formulate their answers.
Man, that's exhausting. But I do want to look at a tangible tactic to combat this, because Gaetano Nino Dinardi laid out a strategy that directly addresses how LLMs parse information.
Right.
He argues the absolute key to AEO is comparison content, you know, the classic versus pages.
It makes complete technical sense when you think about how these models actually synthesize data. Mm-hmm. They map relationships between concepts using semantic vectors. Mm-hmm. So a versus page natively structures your product data into contract nodes, pros, cons, feature comparisons. You're handing the AI the exact structure format it needs to weigh two options against each other. And if you refuse to build that comparison content yourself, like out of some fear of mentioning a competitor, the AI doesn't just give up.
No, it finds it somewhere else.
Right. It relies on outdated competitor pages or maybe some two-year-old Gartner review to explain what your product does. You completely surrender the narrative.
You have to force the AI to read your updated positioning by giving it that contrast it's looking for.
Exactly. And Edin Aramajic actually quantified this approach, which I love. He worked with a fintech company that had absolutely zero presence in AI overviews. Nothing.
Wow, okay.
And by strategically publishing 15 comparison articles, he drove their AI visibility score on comparison queries all the way up to 90.5%.
I have to imagine the pipeline impact of a 90% visibility score is fairly immediate.
Oh, yeah. On day 19 of the campaign, they secured a direct inbound lead sourced entirely from an AI recommendation.
That's incredible.
Zero ad spend, no sales outreach. A buyer researched inside an AI, saw the brand definitively recommended over the competitor, and just initiated contact.
That's the dream.
Right. And by the way, to you listening, if you want to stay ahead of rapid structural shifts like that 7-day recency window we just talked about, just hit subscribe to catch future editions of these deep dives. We are tracking all these changes as they happen, so you don't have to.
It's a critical shift. And, you know, let's connect the mechanics here for a second. If inbound discovery is drying up because AI is intercepting the search intent, that naturally pushes marketing and revenue teams to panic a bit.
Oh, definitely.
They try to compensate for the lost inbound by just cranking up their outbound volume, and they're using AI to do it. Which brings us to this sudden explosion of AI SDRs.
Right, because every sales leader right now is currently being pitched some AI SPR platform. Mm-hmm. The value proposition is literally always the same. Uh-huh. Lower your headcount, increase your outbound volume by a factor of 10, and just book meetings on autopilot.
Right.
But Diego Mangabeira offered a really necessary reality check here. He argues that when AI SDRs fail, it's rarely a failure of the actual language model. It's almost always the result of a fuzzy ideal customer profile.
Well, yeah, because AI is essentially just an execution multiplier.
Yes.
It just amplifies whatever strategy you feed it.
Exactly. So if your targeting is vague and your core messaging is weak, bolting an AI tool onto that process doesn't fix the core issue. It just allows you to waste 500 emails a day burning through your total addressable market much, much faster than a human team ever could.
It's a fundamental clarity problem masquerading as a technology problem.
100%.
And, you know, you listening to this might be thinking, your CRM is clean enough to run one of these autonomous agents.
Yeah, right.
But Nicholas Rabanis made a brilliant point about the gap between the demo environment and reality. When an AI SDR vendor pitches you, their demo is running on perfectly sanitized, pristine sample data.
Quit up, CRMs are never pristine.
Never. They're usually graveyards of outdated contacts.
Yeah, people who left the company 3 years ago.
Exactly. If you point a high-speed AI agent at a decayed list where half the contacts have changed jobs, you aren't doing outbound. You're just annoying the wrong people at unprecedented scale.
Right.
He argues that AI SDRs absolutely require scored total addressable market data, so highly tiered accounts, layered with live real-time signals.
Live signals.
Right. We're talking about API feeds, tracking recent funding rounds, executive job changes, or tech stack deployments. Without that live signal layer, the AI just has no context for its outreach.
Which makes sense. And Elric Laglore broke down how Snowflake navigated this exact infrastructure challenge. They actually managed to get a massive 15x lift in their outbound reply rates, jumping from 0.5% up to 7.6%.
That's a massive jump for an org that size.
Huge. But they didn't achieve that by simply buying a new AI tool and just unleashing it on their 300 SDRs.
They had to rebuild the architecture underneath the reps, didn't they?
Yes, exactly. They completely tore down their old lead scoring models and rebuilt the intent signal routing so that the AI was only drafting messages based on highly qualified contextual triggers.
So the AI was really just the final thin execution layer on top of this massive data restructuring.
Right, exactly.
Let me push back slightly on the execution side of this, though.
Okay.
Even if you have perfect data, right, and perfect intent signals, aren't enterprise buyers just going to develop an immediate aversion to robot callers? I mean, we can all hear that unnatural cadence, that weird half-second latency pause when an AI voice agent responds.
That is the common assumption, and I certainly feel like I can spot an AI immediately.
Right.
But Gabe Larson shared an experience that really challenges that bias. He received a cold call from an AI SDR. He realized what it was within seconds and was fully prepared to hang up.
As most of us would be.
Exactly. But he didn't. And he actually admitted the AI outperformed the vast majority of human SDRs he interacts with.
Wait, outperformed them on what criteria, though?
Brevity and efficiency. It got straight to the point. It didn't stumble over a script. It clearly didn't understand. It knew the specific context of why it was calling. And crucially, it didn't fake rapport.
Oh, the fake rapport is the worst.
Right. Didn't pretend to ask how his weekend was.
Mm.
He noted that the bar for human outbound has gotten so embarrassingly low that a concise, context-aware AI is actually a relief to a busy executive.
Which points to a larger structural shift in go-to-market strategies, honestly. Alan Ruchtin noted that buying isolated AI tools, like one vendor for your AI voice caller, a different tool for your intent data, another for email enrichment, it just creates disconnected spam machines. None of those systems share state.
Yeah. And the winners are building connected GTM systems.
Mm.
Like you pointed to platforms like Alta, where inbound signals, outbound messaging, and intent data operate in a real-time loop.
Right.
So a prospect hits a high-value pricing page, the system instantly identifies similar accounts in the CRM and autonomously launches a highly tailored outbound sequence to those secondary accounts within minutes.
See, that connected loop sounds incredibly powerful, but that entire vision completely collapses if the foundation it sits on is cracked. We keep circling back to this data architecture. It is the single variable that dictates if any of this autonomous AI actually works in practice.
And Justin Hardy quantified just how cracked that foundation is for most companies.
It's bad, isn't it?
It's really bad. He shared a metric indicating that 45% of standard marketing data is dirty, and B2B data decays at an aggressive rate of 30% a year.
And that decay rate is compounding too. Companies merge, domains change, buyers get promoted, or just leave the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So if you integrate an autonomous AI agent with a decaying CRM or unpermissioned third-party data, you aren't achieving scale. You're basically just deploying hallucinated decisions across your entire customer base.
Right. And Balaji Balasubramanian took this concept of shared state a step further. He pointed out that agentic AI, where the system is taking independent action on behalf of the business, it only creates value if it has complete real-time context across the whole enterprise.
Right. An AI agent can't just be trained on your marketing PDFs and call it a day.
No.
It needs to query your live inventory databases, your fulfillment logistics, your historical order state. If your AI marketing agent autonomously spins up an aggressive promotional offer for a key account, but it doesn't have the permissions to see that your supply chain is delayed and the product is literally out of stock.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It destroys client trust the very moment the order is placed.
It's like we're building a state-of-the-art, high-speed AI bullet train, but we're stubbornly trying to run it on rusty, broken tracks from 2015.
That is the perfect way to visualize it.
Yeah.
And Jörg Storm framed the economic reality of this beautifully. He stated, the most expensive AI agent is the one that almost finishes.
Wait, the one that almost finishes? Unpack that for a second.
Well, basic reasoning and conversational abilities are rapidly becoming cheap commodities now.
Right.
Having an AI that can just chat with a user and recommend a white paper, that's table stakes. The real defensible business value lies in completing the regulated complex workflow, the last mile of execution. He used the example of Anvil introducing AI schema mapping.
Okay, so how does that work in practice?
Instead of a human downloading a complex, unstructured PDF invoice, reading it, and manually typing the data into a CRM, the AI reads the document, maps the specific fields perfectly to the company's proprietary data architecture, and turns it into structured, workflow-ready data.
Wow.
Yeah. No human intervention required. It finishes the task completely.
But I have to ask a structural question here.
Sure.
If we're spending all our resources rigorously cleaning our data and structurally mapping it via API so that autonomous agents can process it without errors, I mean, who are we actually formatting this for? Are we even marketing to humans anymore?
I don't think there's a real consensus on that yet, but Arvind Seshan highlighted a paradigm shift that you absolutely have to take seriously.
Okay.
He argues that marketers must begin optimizing for machine preference.
Machine preference.
Yes. As agentic commerce matures, AI agents are increasingly acting as the actual buyers. A human executive tells their AI, find me three enterprise software solutions that meet these security compliance standards and cost under $100,000.
Great.
The AI goes out, does the research, compares the features, and builds the shortlist.
So if the AI is building the shortlist, it does not care if your website has a beautiful parallax scroll or if your brand video uses, like, sweeping emotional storytelling.
Not at all. The AI agent cannot be persuaded by emotional marketing. It's looking for structured data, API documentation, clear pricing tables, and machine-legible signals that definitively prove your product capabilities.
Wow.
If your data is locked inside a beautiful but unreadable brand video, the AI simply moves on to a competitor with structured specs.
That is a staggering pivot. Because if machines are essentially selling to machines, you know, our AI SPR pitching their AI procurement agent, and we are optimizing our collateral for machine legibility, what does the human marketing leader actually do all day?
It forces a total reevaluation of our value. And this brings us to the final reality we have to confront. Human judgment is becoming the ultimate differentiator.
Which makes sense. I mean, we're already seeing the consequences of removing human judgment.
Mm.
Sarah Stella Latanzio shared a study revealing that 40% of long-form posts on LinkedIn are already fully AI-generated.
40%.
Yep. The platforms are just flooded with this generic, perfectly structured AI slop.
Well, when the cost of producing content drops to zero, volume ceases to be a competitive advantage. It just becomes a commodity.
I'd argue it's even worse than that. Pumping out indistinguishable, high-volume AI content isn't just ineffective, it is actively damaging brand equity.
Oh, absolutely.
Buyers immediately recognize the synthetic tone, and they mentally downgrade your authority.
Michelangelo Simonte shared some research on how agencies are handling this. 87% of agencies are using generative AI right now. It's ubiquitous.
Yeah, everyone has it.
But the top-performing agencies are not using it to blindly pump out more generic blog posts. They're deploying AI strictly to eliminate tedious, low-value work. Routine analytics reporting, basic data formatting, initial keyword clustering.
All right, so by automating the drudgery, they're deliberately keeping humans in the driver's seat for creative decisions, strategic taste, and brand voice. Taste is basically becoming the new defensive moat.
And applying that taste requires a deep technical understanding of your tools. Louis Cho offered some highly tactical advice on matching AI models to the specific difficulty of the task.
Okay.
He pointed out a glaring inefficiency right now. Marketers are getting access to high-end frontier models like Claude Fable 5, and they're using it to write basic social media captions.
Which is like using a Super Bowl ad budget to run a localized retargeting banner?
Yeah.
It's just a massive misallocation of resources?
Exactly. He explains that Fable 5 costs roughly 5 times more per API call than a mid-tier model like Opus.
5 times.
Yeah. Fable 5 is not designed to be a faster typewriter. It's a strategist engineered for long horizon, complex reasoning tasks.
Mm-hmm, I see.
If you need an AI to analyze a 50-page customer journey brief and identify structural gaps in the funnel, you deploy Fable. If you just need to A/B test some email subject lines, you use the cheaper, faster model. You have to direct the AI with actual intent.
So we're transitioning from being the manual laborers in the marketing engine to being the strategists who allocate the compute power.
Precisely.
But Eddie Reynolds offered a vital reframe on how we actually apply that strategy.
Right, because right now, teams are running around with this shiny new technology asking, what can AI do to help us?
Right.
It's a solution in search of a problem. Can it summarize our Zoom calls? Yes. Can it draft blog posts? Yes.
But summarizing a meeting doesn't necessarily move the needle on pipeline generation.
Exactly. He argues we need to invert the question entirely. Stop asking what the AI can do. Start by looking at your business fundamentals and asking, where is our pipeline broken? Where is our biggest opportunity to capture revenue?
Mm.
If your inbound conversion is highly efficient, but your outbound response rate is abysmal, then you allocate your AI engineering resources to fix outbound. human judgment dictates where to point the machine. The AI provides the velocity, but the human determines the vector.
I love that. So as we wrap up this analysis, what is the core concept our listeners should be dissecting with their teams this week?
I'd say look at the trajectory of every post we analyzed today. AI intercepting discovery, AI autonomous SBRs, AI agents acting as procurement researchers.
Yeah.
We are rapidly approaching a business environment where AI agents will predominantly interact with other AI agents. And when that entire middle layer of execution is automated, the brands that secure the deal won't be the ones with the cleverest ChatGPT prompts. The winners will be the brands backed by the most undeniable, real-world human credibility. Authentic subject matter expertise is the only signal an AI cannot easily replicate.
The tools are changing, but authority remains fundamentally human. If you enjoy this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on field marketing, channel and partner marketing, account-based marketing, MarTech, go-to-market, and social selling. Thank you for joining us, and remember to subscribe to catch the next deep dive.